Hiya, on Lingua Franca with me, Maria Zylstra. Something of a reflection this week on the words of the year of 2010. The editor of the Macquarie Dictionary, Susan Butler, was instrumental in starting up the Australian Macquarie Dictionary Word of the Year competition, taking as her inspiration the Word of the Year, or WOTY, event launched by the American Dialect Society in 1990, and which has come of age this year, being 21 years old now. So the Macquarie Dictionary WOTY here in Australia is, by comparison then, just a kindy graduate, having started in 2006. And there are many such events for many different languages held in countries all over the world, listing either new or newly popular words, many of them buzzwords that don't stand the test of time. Some of these WOTYs also canvass unpopular lexical items, words and phrases that people are sick to death of hearing, moving forward, say. But what distinguishes the Macquarie Dictionary listing is that the candidate words have already made it into the Macquarie Dictionary online, having been included in the update that takes place around Christmas time annually of around 1,000 words. And then a selection of those is chosen by Susan Butler, but are not put forward in a bald list, as they are in other WOTYs, but are instead classified in subject clusters before being revealed as the nominees for a popular choice of winner. Right, Susan?
Yes, that's right. So back in 1991, I published a Dictionary of New Words, and I still have the sort of collections that I'd lovingly put together as preparation for that, that sorted words into, you know, eating and drinking, fashion, colloquialism, all the sorts of categories that some of them are still constant today, things like food and fashion and colloquialism and so on, and politics. So it is always a very useful way of seeing the picture that's emerging from the sorts of words that we're taking on as words that we share in the community, words that we think of as being our own, words that we feel we need and want to use. If you categorise them that way, you can see the things that are emerging as significant categories, and therefore you can see what's been important to us over a period of time. So the word of the year is simply looking at one year. This is our fifth year for doing it, and so we're beginning to build up a record. If you go to the website, you can look at all the previous words of the year, and going right back to that first year where the winning word was muffin top, you can look at what seemed to be significant in politics, in the environment and so on. And in a way, it's almost becoming a bit of a nostalgia trip to go back 5 years.
Yeah. Well, look, I just want to go back a little bit to the origins, because you linked it then to a book that you said that you'd put together of new words. Was it that gave you the awareness to start up the WOTY, the Word of the Year for Macquarie?
Yes, I think the habit of categorising and classifying the words, new words, started then. I think we also did our thesaurus in that sort of first 10 years. We produced a thesaurus from the dictionary, and that was an amazing experience for all the editors who worked on it, because it was fascinating to see what ended up in particular clusters of words. I remember that we found that we actually needed a new group of words for people who did things and people who had things done to them, agents and recipients, active people or passive people, if you know what I mean. And that hadn't been a category in previous thesauruses that we'd looked at, and it seemed to us to be an amazing oversight. I think also that we found it very entertaining to see the way Australianisms clustered under certain categories as well. The entry for depart had a whole string of Australian colloquialism.
The entry for what? I beg your pardon?
Depart.
Oh, depart.
So for going away. Words for Going Away and Words for Telling People to Go Away produced quite a cluster. And then again, you know, in words to do with the Australian landscape, in words to do with Australian politics, the beach and so on, activities, plants and animals, you got this strong sense of Australian English coming through that you could see when the words were grouped in that way, that was not necessarily so evident when you started with the dictionary at A and read through to Z or browsed in between.
Right. So maybe we could just have a bit of a chat about some of the words, just a few of them. We don't have a lot of time, but one that appealed to me straight away was Goldilocks economy.
Yes, I like that too. It goes back to the story of Goldilocks and the porridge, and the first one was too hot, and the second one was too cold, and the third one was just right. So what you want is an economy that is just right. It's not overheating and it's not going out backwards sort of thing, but it's just moving along at a nice, comfortable, even pace.
Yeah. Well, what I like about it is that it relies on some cultural knowledge. So it thickens our language with its references.
Yes, I think that's very true. And I like sandbagging for something, you know, a similar reason. So this is an Australian coinage. It came up in the election. It's shoring up the vote in a particular electorate by targeting promises to that electorate. But in the current situation where everyone is awash and sandbagging quite a lot, it's a very Australian image.
One of them is just a straight translation, redbush, from the Afrikaans word, I think, for a particular species, rooibos, of a kind of tree or leaves of which are used as tea.
Yes, and that, I think, that is indicative of one theme that I can see emerging in all of these words, which is our search for food and drink that is therapeutic, that is going to solve all of life's medical problems and make us fit and healthy and slim. So there's a number of those sorts of things. There's red bush tea. There's also chia is another one that's an appetite suppressant. There is superfood itself as a term for all these foods that are so wonderful in some particular way that just having a dose of them each day is going to do wonders for our health. So that seems to be one of the new themes that's emerging.
Something related to that is herbiculture. That's one that took my fancy as well, the kind of backyard gardening that's become popular and even groovy, to use an old term.
Yes, that's right. We've had a number of politicians now pictured with a spade in hand in the backyard, both American and Australian politicians, I think, digging up the soil so that they can plant the tomatoes or the whatever. So this notion, it's part of the locavore idea, the slow food idea, the environmental link with food, where we don't want our food to travel. It's healthier for us if we can grow it in our own backyard and pick it. It's the best idea, but if we grow it somewhere locally and have it delivered pretty quickly, that's even better. And then if we have food delivered over miles and miles and miles, this is not very good for the environment.
Ties in also with the austerity aspect. I have a particular favourite. I don't know whether you do, and I don't know whether you feel free enough to say, even if you do, but just before you tell a favourite, if you have one, screwage is another good one with a double meaning. I think the literal one is that it's the charge that you perhaps have to pay at a restaurant. It's a variation, of course, on corkage, but with bottles now having screw tops instead of corks. But it has the added negative connotation of the feeling that you're perhaps being screwed with this screwage, because anyone can, of course, just unscrew the cap.
That's right. Someone had to have the bottle opener and take the cork out of the bottle before, but it really has nothing to do with all of with that. It's just an extra charge from the restaurant. But screwage is very humorous and you know, does this job beautifully of conveying that complicated sort of set of attitudes. There, it's in an edge set. There was corkage, then there was cakeage. If you brought your own birthday cake to the restaurant, for instance, you were charged cakeage. And so now we have screwage in the set.
Mm. And do you have a favourite?
Well, I quite like Black Swan Event. I suppose partly because of the Australian link and partly because it's just a nice idea. This is modelling future outcomes. It started out as financial modelling and so, of course, the GFC was an absolute example of a black swan event. Who would have predicted that the banks would all suddenly collapse? But a black swan event is a major event that is so improbable that it's not likely to be predicted. And the statistician who came up with the term was harking back to a world in which Europeans thought that swans were white. They were always white. That was before they came to Australia and discovered that swans could be black. So in that world, who would have thought of a black swan? And so these unpredictable events are the ones that can have severe consequences. And I heard someone talking just the other day about meteorites being black swan events. That if a meteorite strikes the world at some point, well, who can predict that?
Mm. My favourite is blink kissing. It's something that I did without knowing that it had a term to describe it. It's when you blink at an animal I do it to my children sometimes too, to kind of indicate to them that you mean them no harm. It has a kind of a calming effect.
Well, in the case of cats, it seems that cats regard a direct stare as being aggressive. And so if you think of the room where there are all these people in it and the cat walks in and the cat lovers all look at the cat and say, oh, what a lovely cat, and the cat walks straight past them and goes to the person who doesn't like cats, who is the only person in the room who is ignoring the cat completely. And so this is the only person in the room who, as far as the cat is concerned, is behaving politely, and therefore the cat goes to the polite person and not all those rude people who are rather aggressively staring at it. So it's an interesting little one, isn't it?
Yeah. That still doesn't describe blink kissing, though, when you're actually looking but blinking.
No, that's true. Yes, the blink kissing is modifying your behaviour so that you reduce the aggressive staring and blink slower. It kind of allows you to do something that's quite intimate, which is to look at the cat directly and soften it so that the cat doesn't see it as aggression.
Yeah, yeah. And one that I didn't know existed but also had never heard before and no familiarity with either is bunter. What's that? Where did that come from?
Unfortunately, that's one of those colloquialisms where we have to say, sorry, we don't know. We know that it's common and it's one of the instances where if only we could have everyone in Australia wired for sound, we could perhaps have overheard the first time someone used bunter and explained it, worked out why, where this word has come from. It means out of control, experiencing strong emotion as joy, anger, etc., to go bunter when the team wins, to go bunter and burn the house down. It's common enough, but we have no idea where it comes from, so if anyone can help, please let us know.
The editor of the Macquarie Dictionary, Susan Butler. The winning words of the year, by popular choice as well as by committee, will be announced on February the 2nd. I'm Maria Zylstra at abc.net.au/rn/linguafranca. Bye-bye for now.